On this Veterans Day, we are going to take a look at a book written about an epic march and a terrifying battle for New Guinea that involved many men from Wisconsin, the 32nd Division of Wisconsin. It's called The Ghost Mountain Boys. That's the title of the book. And the author is James Campbell from Lodi, Wisconsin. He has written the book. When did it come out, James? It came first out in hardcover in
last October.
Yeah, last October. So now it's out in soft cover, and it's a wonderfully crafted book. It recently won the 2008 Donnelly Literary Awards. That's given for the highest literary achievement by a Wisconsin author. He is also the author of The Final Frontiersman. We visited with him about that. That's about his cousin who lived in isolation, beautiful isolation in Alaska. He's also a regular contributor to Outside magazine. And this book is about a battle that took place in New Guinea. And we talked with James when the book came out in hardcover, so I'm really pleased to have him back now as we visit with him about the soft cover edition of it. You may have missed that first interview. And so we're going to cover some of the same ground we covered a year ago on this, James.
That's great. But I'm happy to talk about it.
Yeah. How did you happen to get involved in this particular war effort and epic?
Well, last week I was at the WLA awards ceremony, and some woman came up to me and very apologetically confessed that she could never conceive of reading a war story. And later I confessed that I never imagined writing a war story.
Yeah.
But it came out of my fascination with New Guinea. I went to New Guinea for the first time in 1989. My brother and I just went off on a young men's adventure. We grew up on National Geographic specials, mm-hmm. and we'd always wanted to go somewhere remote, and New Guinea was the one place, more than any other, that really fascinated us. So I quit my job in Chicago. My employer said I had a Peter Pan complex, and my brother and I took off. And I was just – both of us were just stunned by the place, by the culture, by the topography. And I learned on that trip for the first time that a war had been fought on the island of New Guinea. I'd never known about it. I made a promise after that trip that I'd return. And in 1995, I got married. My wife and I and my brother, who joined us on our so-called honeymoon, went back to New Guinea. And my wife happened to get malaria there and suffered enormously. But I learned on that trip for the first time that this war had been fought by the 32nd Division. And I realized that I grew up in Wisconsin surrounded by this history, surrounded by these men who, by the way, were typical of World War II veterans. They never talked about it.
Yeah.
And I didn't know anything about it, and I was ashamed of myself. So I started slowly researching the book, and at some point I realized, or slowly researching the story, and at some point I realized that there was a book to be written.
And it's a wonderful book, and it's a horrific story that these guys had to go through.
Yeah, MacArthur's chief engineering officer called New Guinea the ultimate nightmare country, and he said that the U.S. Army would face challenges without precedent in American military history on the island of New Guinea. And, you know, mind you, this was after the tragedy of Bataan. And, they suffered enormously, not just the men of the Ghost Mountain Battalion, 126th Infantry Regiment, 2nd Battalion, but the entire division. Nearly 70% of them had malaria or dengue fever. They had jungle rot. They had trench foot. These, you know, were men were fighting with 101, 102, 104 degree fevers.
Yeah. James Campbell, our guest, author of The Ghost Mountain Boys. I haven't given the number yet, so if you'd like to join in with your own questions or comments as we visit with him about the 32nd Division, this particular battle, and kind of a little about Veterans Day, too. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us, and the email address is talk@wpr.org. And you tried to trace, the story begins with they had to climb a mountain,
yeah,
over this mountain range.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just an absolutely unbelievable set of circumstances that this group had to travel over this mountain in this terrible heat and humidity, and then fight a battle.
And then fight a battle. Yeah, it took them 42 days to go 120 miles. They went through these malarial swamps and then into these jungles where it was 100 degrees, 100% humidity. And then they got up into the mountains where there were hailstorms.
Yeah.
And then they reached the north coast. And most of these guys lost a third of their body weight. So they went in at 180 pounds. And then they went into battle at 120 pounds. It's inconceivable.
Yeah. Well, Holly in Onalaska is online. So let's go to Holly. Holly, hi. Thank you for calling.
Thank you for having me. I had was wondering if you had any information. I'm actually just right now researching. My great uncle was in World War II from the Nielsville 32nd Division, and he was one of the youngest. He was 22 when he got it. He earned the Silver Star Award. Mm-hmm. He was one of the youngest ones, and I was wondering if you came across any information about the National Guard in. And if it was in your book, and I'll take my answer off the air.
Okay. What's his name?
It was Wilford Evans.
Wilford Evans. You know, I don't recognize that name, but one of the main characters in my book was Herbert Smith from Neillsville, Wisconsin. And I should tell you, if you're doing any research at all, I spent hundreds and hundreds of hours at the Wisconsin Veterans Museum here in Madison, and they helped me out enormously. So that is... that is the best place to begin your research. They have a great archives, and they'll assist you in your search. So I think that's probably the best place for you to start.
And that's the one again, the Veterans
Wisconsin Veterans Museum here in Madison.
Okay,
it's right across from the Capitol, and they can really help you out.
Okay, great. Thank you so much.
Sure.
Thanks. Thanks so much for calling. And these people were. Well, they're just average guys, weren't they? I mean, you know.
Yeah, they were, and they weren't professional soldiers, and it's the point I always try to make in my book talks. It was a brutal war, but, you know, these were not brutal men. They were the consummate citizen soldiers. They left behind families and young children and young wives and mothers, and, you know, many of them obviously did not return, but, you know, they had no expectations of glory, and they didn't want to be heroes. They just wanted to go and make it back home.
You set off in 2006, wasn't it?
Yeah.
to do what no one had done since World War II, which was to retrace the steps of the Ghost Mountain Boys.
Yeah,
some cockamamie idea.
Which was it?
Yeah,
right. No, it wasn't. I couldn't write a Bill Bryson-esque, you know, kind of comedic novel about it. No, it was the hardest thing I've ever tried to do in my life, and that includes, you know, spending a lot of time in the Arctic for my first book. But we walked across New Guinea, and as you said, it was a historic achievement in its own right because it was the first time anybody had done it since World War II, and I trained for a year for it, and it still nearly killed me. The first day, I fell down the mountain 20 feet with had a big 70-pound pack on, and I tore the ACL in my right knee. I went back to Port Moresby, got painkillers and anti-inflammatories, and was helicoptered back out. And then we continued, and a bunch of guys got malaria. One guy we had to airlift out 2 days short of the coast because he developed really severe leg infections, and he got back to Port Moresby. They pumped him full of intravenous antibiotics, and they said 2 days later they would have had to take off his leg.
Oh, man.
So another point I always try to make is, you know, as hard as it was, in no way am I trying to compare what my group did with what these men did, because there is no comparison. We had everything working in our favor, and they had everything working against them. And when we finished, you know, we got to celebrate, and we didn't march off to war.
You didn't have to start shooting.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Boy, James Campbell, our guest, give us a call with your questions or comments here as we talk with him about his book, The Ghost Mountain Boys. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us at talk@wpr.org. Give us a call or send us an email, and we'll be glad to get you involved here. So these, you know, one of the sort of sad things about this whole business was Douglas MacArthur, General MacArthur, and I guess this happens a lot in war, but the guy All right, he was a general, but he didn't serve his men very well.
No, sadly. I kind of took my cue from the 60 veterans that I interviewed for the book, and I can say unequivocally that I think one of them out of the entire group had something kind to say about Douglas MacArthur. Yeah, he pushed these guys unmercifully. He relieved the commanding general of the 32nd Division, a general that the soldiers loved, and replaced him with another general and told that general, take Buna or don't come back alive. So he constantly pushed his commanding officers to capture Buna. He was in a race with the Marines for the first victory of the Southwest Pacific. You know, they were on Guadalcanal at the same time. I should say, though, that I think at the 32nd Division's expense, he learned a lot of lessons that he later employed in the war. But he did not serve the 32nd Division very well.
You interviewed, as you said, 61 or two people.
Yeah.
And so that must have been a great experience in and of itself.
Oh, yeah. It was an incredible experience. Many of them are my friends today. And you know, sadly, between the time I began the book and finished the book, a number of them passed away. But the first time I met any of the men was at the 32nd Division Old Timers meeting at Fort McCoy, Wisconsin, and I lived in the barracks with them for 5 days.
Oh, man.
When these, you know, 80, 90-year-old men acted like they were 20. You know, they drank beer and they danced and they told bad jokes and they played poker. In fact, one, the oldest guy in the group announced to all the other guys that he wasn't going to die of a stroke or heart attack. He was going to be shot by an irate husband. It was a great experience for me. And as I said, I grew very, very fond of all those men.
Let's go to Debbie in Delafield next. Debbie, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. I have a great uncle who is, I think he's like 92, 93
uh-huh.
now. And I know that he was in New Guinea.
Was he with the 32nd or the 41st Division? Do you know?
No, that I don't know. But I do know that they grew up in the Chicago area.
Uh-huh.
Well, and I'm wondering if that is part of the group that you were talking about.
What is his name?
His last name is Schneeberger.
I tried to uncover as many of the veterans as I could. Of course,
sure.
there were men that I didn't find. Sure, he could have been a draftee out of Chicago. There is one engineer who was part of an engineering unit that was part of the Battle of Buna that was in Chicago. He actually did not consent to an interview, but he is living there. So you said your father-in-law?
My great uncle.
Oh, I'm sorry. Your great uncle. Sure,
yeah.
he certainly could have been part of the 32nd Division or the 41st Division, which also fought in New Guinea but farther up the coast. Again, I would encourage you to, if you're interested in pursuing it, to go through the Wisconsin Veterans Museum.
Sure, and actually, I'm very interested in looking at the book because his wife is no longer alive, but his daughter is alive, and there's some things that he does that she doesn't understand.
Yeah.
I'm wondering if it's related to just some of the trauma, because they had such a hard time when he came back
from
the war, and I'm wondering if this could help her reconnect with him, because she doesn't talk to him anymore.
That's a shame. I think it'd be hard not to be traumatized by an experience like that.
Right.
Of course,
right.
Many of the men came back and they had malaria for 10 or 20 years, and many of them to this day have nightmares,
right.
which is certainly understandable. But certainly the book, I think, would shed some light on exactly what he went through, which, you know, is about as unpretty as you can imagine.
Right. Well, thank you so much.
Sure.
Could you please tell me your last name again, because I couldn't quite understand it on the radio.
Yeah, it's Campbell, like the soup.
Okay, thank you.
And if you, I have a website, too, if you want to take a look at it. It's called, ghostmountainboys.com.
Okay.
And you can at least see some photos there and we're actually making a documentary film about it. And you can watch the trailer to the documentary film.
Well, thank you very much.
Sure. Nice to talk to you.
Thanks for calling. Appreciate it. James in Appleton, it's your turn next. Hi, James.
Hi. James Campbell, this is your friend from middle school, James Cronmiller, who you used to know as Jamie.
Of course, Jamie Cronmiller from my Spanish class and math class, yes.
That's right, that's right. I just had to call because I wanted you to know that you're adding to this wonderful Veterans Day that I'm having. I have the fortune of working for a bank that is closed on Veterans Day. And my father, who was a World War II veteran, coincidentally passed away on Veterans Day.
Mm-hmm.
And I was at his gravesite. I got into my car, turned on the radio, heard a voice, and thought, I wonder if that's James Campbell.
And has the voice changed?
And so when I'm done with this phone call, I will continue on my drive home, and I will enjoy my father's favorite dessert, a chocolate eclair.
Well, I encourage that. It was really nice to hear from you, Jamie.
Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate it. James Campbell, our guest today, author of The Ghost Mountain Boys. I'm Larry Mueller. Jim Packard, our producer, here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking today with James Campbell of Lodi, Wisconsin, who is also the author of The Ghost Mountain Boys, the epic march and terrifying battle for New Guinea. It's the forgotten war of the South Pacific fought by the 32nd Division's Ghost Mountain Boys. And lots of callers online to visit with you, James. So let's go to Gloria in Pittsville next. Gloria, hello.
Yes, just wanted to tell you my husband was one of those men that was there. And I would like to get a copy of your book so I give them to my kids.
Well, I think it would be a good gift. Did your husband ever talk about it?
Not too much, no.
Yeah,
when they had the reunion, when they get together, then there was mostly comical things, but no, not too much.
Yeah, I think James Bradley said it best in his book Flags of Our Fathers. He said they came home and they got on with living. And, they suffered mightily.
Yes, they did. Yeah. Came back with malaria and, of course, very nervous. And so he was hard to live with for quite a while.
And I take it he's passed away?
Yes, he has,
mm-hmm.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
What was, would you mind saying his last name?
Florence.
What was his first name?
George Florence.
You know,
he left with the guards from Neillsville.
Yeah. Oh, he was part of the Neillsville crew too.
He was.
Yeah, exactly.
That was one of his officers.
Right. Well, I think that Neillsville group was a really unique group, and certainly Herbert Smith was a charismatic and unique man, and he of course led him over the mountains.
Right. Mm-hmm.
I don't recognize your husband's name, and I'm sorry for that. When I was researching the book, I tried to get in touch with as many people as I possibly could. But, of course, there were people that I missed. But I would have loved to have heard his stories.
But I hope you do get a copy of the book, Gloria.
Okay, can I order through Amazon?
You can get it at any bookstore, and independent bookstores, or Borders, or Barnes & Noble, or Book World, or, as I said,
okay,
any of the independent bookstores. Or you could certainly get it online, too.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you very much for your call.
And Walter in Waukesha, it's your turn now. Hi, Walter.
Hi. A couple of comments. In 1997, I taught at the University of Technology in Papua New Guinea in Lay.
I know Lay well. Uh-huh.
And then the next year, 1998, I taught at Goroka University up in the Highlands.
Yeah, I know Goroka well, too.
From Goroka, we had the pleasure of going to a Rotary convention that was held in Rabaul,
mm-hmm,
on an island that isn't Papua New Guinea proper, but close.
Yeah.
And one of the things that impressed me there is we took a visit to an Australian cemetery. Apparently the Aussies didn't bring home their dead, but buried them there.
Mm-hmm.
And it was very interesting, because a lot of the people with us were Australian, to hear how the Australians and the U.S. fought side by side in that theater.
Yeah. Well, I think the Australians and the U.S. soldiers, initially there were some problems, but once they got into battle, they developed a high regard for each other. And all the men that I talked with, all the veterans that I talked with, had nothing but wonderful things to say about the Australians. And, you know, as you know, it's probably the most historic battle in Australia's history. I wish I could have been part of that.
Yeah, I thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. And there was some tension between the Aussies and the U.S. fellows, at least prior to the war, I think, if I'm recalling from your book.
Yeah, well, there's some, you know, funny stories about that. And the great majority of the Australian Army was, of course, overseas fighting. And here the 32nd Division swoops in, and of course, men being men, they started trying to woo the Australian women. And when the Australian soldiers came back, they weren't particularly pleased about that. But once they got to New Guinea and they got into battle together, things changed very, very quickly.
And you have a comment in your book, I think toward the end, maybe in your notes or in the epilogue, about this whole business of, and here we are on Veterans Day, of the graves. We have U.S. servicemen are in graves in half the countries. I don't know if half the countries in the world, but
yeah,
pretty much all the continents.
Yeah. And, of course, in New Guinea was, both the waters and the mountains and the jungles was the graveyard of the Pacific. And a lot of those bodies have been brought back, but of course I'm sure there's some that have not.
Yeah. Walter, I thank you very much. Steve in Madison, give you a chance now. Hi, Steve.
Hello.
Hello.
I just wanted to mention I tuned in while you were discussing the feelings about Douglas MacArthur, and I remember my father was a Marine pilot in the Central Pacific during World War II, and I just remember still as a child how vehemently he hated MacArthur because, according to him, when they evacuated the Philippines, MacArthur used up space on planes for his furniture and items like that that could have been used, in my father's estimation, to evacuate troops. I remember just how much he disregarded MacArthur for that, but I have to say that my father left behind has a whole trove of photos from his experience hopping through the islands in Guam and Saipan, Tarawa and Iwo Jima.
Yeah.
And I'm just in the process right now of sort of archiving and scanning some of that stuff, and he's got scrapbooks, so I'll have to definitely take a look at your book. And
yeah, well, thank you.
Yeah.
You're lucky to have those photos, because I talked with lots of children of veterans who really have nothing. They may have a scrap of paper or a photo at the most, and they don't even have the memories because, as the woman said before, I forget her name right now. Their fathers never talked about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you're lucky to have heard that.
Thank you very much for calling, Steve. Jim in Waukesha, we'll turn to you next. Hi, Jim.
Hi.
What's on your mind?
My father-in-law was in the Battle of Buna.
He was.
Yes, he was with the 127th Infantry.
Yeah, right. Well,
he recently passed away.
Mm-hmm.
And in the process of going through his things, we discovered that he was not mentioned in the book, 32nd Division History.
He was not?
No. I'm wondering why that would be.
Well, I have no idea why that would be. Were all the other members of the Waukesha Company mentioned?
Well, he was actually from Milwaukee.
Oh, he was from Milwaukee.
Yeah.
But all the other members of the Milwaukee had a number of companies, as I recall. Were all the other members of the Milwaukee companies mentioned?
Well, we don't know that.
Yeah. I really don't know why. You can check the rosters at, but you know he was in part of the 127th, right?
Yes.
Huh. Well, I really can't explain that. I'm sorry.
Is there any way to correct something like that, James? I mean, what?
Well, I suppose. I don't know if there would be any way to correct a book.
A book, but to have it on the record somewhere.
Well, yeah, you can. The 32nd Division, Infantry Division, is based out of Milwaukee. And if you just go to their website online, just Google the Red Arrow or 32nd Division, you can get in contact with them. And perhaps they could tell you how to rectify that. But I'm really not sure how you'd go about doing that.
Hmm. And good luck with that, Jim. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. We finally have a few open lines, so we can get you on pretty quickly at 1-800-642-1234 or email us at talk@wpr.org. Let's turn to Carl in Madison next. Carl, hello.
Howdy. One simple question and one a bit more complex.
Okay.
The simple question is can you tell the story behind the story? What does the title, Ghost Mountain Boys, what's the story behind that? And the second question is, I remember documentaries from the 1950s
mm-hmm.
where this campaign was discussed. And at that time, there was a lot of hubris involved, and they basically pointed to the hubris of the Japanese, saying, you know, nobody could make it through there, so we're not going to pay attention to it.
Right.
Those movements couldn't have been gone undiscovered. I'm wondering what the real story is behind how much surprise was really involved.
Well, the battalion, the 2nd Battalion of the 126th Infantry Regiment, came to be known as the Ghost Mountain Battalion because they crossed this very high peak in the Owen Stanley Range about midway through their journey called Ghost Mountain. The natives called it Mount Ororo, and they believed that it was haunted. But the men tell stories about crossing Ghost Mountain in there, and they thought it was the eeriest place they'd ever seen in their lives. But the reason Douglas MacArthur sent him over the mountains, despite the protests of the Australians, Papua had been an Australian colony since the early 1900s, and when MacArthur informed them that he was going to send over the 32nd Division or elements of the division over these mountains and through the jungles, they said, don't do it. They're not going to be able to make it through. You know, the terrain is just much too rugged. Well, MacArthur could not be dissuaded from his plan. Was there an element of surprise? No, nothing. By the time they got to the coast, the Ghost Mountain Battalion, they realized that their journey had been in vain. MacArthur had discovered usable airfields on the north coast of the Papuan Peninsula and had airlifted over the mountains the rest of the 32nd Division. So by the time these men marched into battle, the battle had already begun. So was there an element of surprise? No. MacArthur had actually hoped that they could sneak in behind the Japanese who had crossed the Papuan Peninsula from north to south to invade Port Moresby. MacArthur had hoped to send him down a river tributary and surprise him and essentially annihilate the Japanese army, but that never happened because the 32nd Division, the Ghost Mountain Battalion, moved so slowly as it was going north across the peninsula. I'm not quite certain that makes sense without maps.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Sure. I think it made pretty good sense. Bill in Madison, on to you. Hello, Bill.
Hello. My father, told me some stories about that. He survived that ordeal.
Yeah.
In the 32nd, and he darn near died of malaria.
Well, I'm sure of that. Many died or darn near died.
He darn near died of malaria. When they shipped him back to the States, you know, he was down to around 120 pounds, yeah. And this man was 6'4" tall.
Yeah, yeah.
And he recovered from that, spent time in the States, put weight back on, got himself, you know, fit again. They shipped him to Europe. He ended up in Patton's army. He went right into the Battle of the Bulge.
Oh,
so
man.
He saw two miserable ordeals. It sounds
right,
like...
But the thing is, he about MacArthur... Just like Mr. Campbell said, MacArthur was absolutely, he had absolutely nothing nice to say about MacArthur, but he absolutely loved Omar Bradley and George S. Patton.
Mm-hmm. Well, I encountered one veteran who had something nice to say about General MacArthur. Certainly at Buna, and I don't think this is expressing it too harshly, he sent a lot of people to their deaths.
And needlessly, he says he wasted a lot of good men's lives.
Yeah, yeah, I think that's certainly true.
What was your dad's last name?
Irving.
Irving.
Mm. Master Sergeant Robert Irving.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, I thank you very much for calling.
Thank you.
Appreciate it very much. Steve in Green Bay, it's your turn. Hi, Steve.
Good morning.
Good morning.
My father was in combat in the Pacific, in the Philippines, and in New Guinea.
Mm-hmm.
And he also had malaria, but he was awarded a Bronze Star.
He was?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
He and a number of, I think approximately three other infantrymen went behind enemy lines on an inflatable and intentionally drew enemy fire so that they could find out where the enemy positions were.
Where did this happen?
Well, you know, I'm not exactly sure, but I think he may have been in Dutch New Guinea.
Oh, yeah. Well, certainly MacArthur's army was on the western side, then called Dutch New Guinea. But
yeah.
that's a heroic story.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I had to spend some time in contact with Senator Feingold's office.
Uh-huh.
It's very difficult to get old records from the military in World War II, and he assisted me in getting some of the teletypes and some of the information.
Oh, he did.
Yeah, and I do have the Bronze Star. My father died, and we gave my mother a flag and then had the Bronze Star pinned on it, and it was encased in kind of a triangle.
Yeah.
So she still has that.
Ah, that's a wonderful gift.
Yeah.
So your father went on to the Philippines, too, huh?
He was also in the Philippines and New Guinea, and I think he may have been one or two other places, but it's kind of jumbled right now.
Yeah, sure. Well, the 32nd Division, most of them came back to Australia after the Buna victory, recovered from malaria and dysentery and whatever else they had, and then eventually took part in the invasion of the Philippines, and they called it the hard way back. And the 32nd Division fought more days in World War II than any other division, 654 days.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Man. Yeah.
He was also awarded I think it's called a Philippine Campaign Medal.
Yeah, right. Well, you should be very proud of that.
And thank you very much for calling and sharing that. It's great. Well, it's amazing how many, everybody who's called has had a relative, a dad or a granddad or uncle.
I remember when I first began researching the book, I was desperate to find people to populate the book. And, of course, there's so many names that were left out of the book, sadly. But then I would have, as I always explain, I would have written a 3,000-page book, you know, that nobody at all would have written. But there's so many people who are worthy of mention and whose stories are very heroic that I had, you know, that ended up on the cutting room floor. And it's sad.
I heard you mention that you're working on a film or a documentary.
Yeah, I started a documentary film crew, and we filmed our journey across New Guinea. In 2006, we got, of course, you know, battery power was a problem, but we got 44 hours of footage, and we have our archival footage, and now we're talking with National Geographic and History Channel and PBS, and hoping to put together a 1 or 2 hour documentary.
Oh, that's great. Gene in Waupaca will give you a chance now. Hi, Gene.
Hi.
Hello.
I have a father too who was in New Guinea.
Uh-huh.
And ever since I've been reading about your book. Or hearing about it, I've wondered what part, because I don't know the dates that your book covers, but my dad, I just talked to my sister on the phone, and she said my dad got to Finchhaven.
Finchhaven, yeah.
Finchhaven,
yeah.
May 13th of 44.
Yeah, that's right. So he was part of MacArthur's drive up the north coast of New Guinea.
Uh-huh. He was a supply officer, and he wrote to my mom that all he did was dig in the mud.
mud, and more mud. Yeah.
And he was 32, I think, when he was recruited.
Man. He was one of the older men.
Yeah, he had a wife, a daughter, and then I was born while he was over there.
Uh-huh.
But he was in the hospital almost all the time. He was in the in New Guinea and when he came home. Because he got jungle rot, is what he called it.
Well, you know, some of the men that I talked with still have outbreaks of skin infections. I mean, they're in their 80s and 90s that their doctors trace back to New Guinea. But, you know, mud and leeches and endless rain, it was a miserable place to fight a war, to be part of a war.
And on the malaria, one of the good things, and I think you sort of mentioned this earlier with MacArthur, he did learn some lessons, and one of the lessons had to do with malaria, and having malaria pills for his troops.
Yeah, exactly right. I mean, many of these men went to one of the most malarial places on Earth, and they didn't have quinine, which doesn't prevent malaria. It merely mitigates the effects of malaria. And those who did have quinine, many of them didn't have waterproof containers, so the quinine just dissolved in their pockets. But later they had Adabrin, and of course they also had DDT, which they used later on to relieve, you know, some of the mosquito problems in New Guinea.
No. Thank you again, Gene, for calling. And Sue and Adigo will give you a chance. Hi, Sue.
Yes, hi. My grandfather was a World War II surgeon.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so I'm curious to know if you know anything more about the surgeons and the doctors, and where can I get more information about him? He was he was pulled out of Daggett, Michigan. And
oh, yeah.
As an interesting
in the
note,
UP, right?
I got both my grandfather's and my husband's father's papers, because he, too, was in the Army.
Uh-huh.
However, my grandfather was coming home the same week that my husband's grandfather was leaving.
Oh, my gosh.
And they actually went through the same station.
That's amazing.
So yeah. I guess my question is, if they have that connection, is it possible that his records may also be down in Madison?
Sure. It's very possible that his records would be here. Daggett's in the western UP, right?
Daggett is just north of Menominee Marinette.
Oh, okay, right. And, yeah, there are, of course, there were a lot of, there was a Menominee Marinette unit. There were a lot of men from the western UP that were part of the 32nd Division. In fact, you ask about the surgeons, one of the main characters in my book was a division surgeon named Major Simon Warmenhoven from Grand Rapids, Michigan. But again, you know, not to sound the same chord, but the Wisconsin Veterans Museum is a great resource, and it's the best place to begin your research.
Okay.
All right.
All right, thank you.
Sure. Thanks for the call.
Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call very much. Maybe we have time for Betsy in Two Rivers. Betsy, hello.
Hi there. Yeah, my father-in-law was Red Arrow. He was out of Partyville.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And he was National Guard, I believe, and just before he was done with his service, he was sent over. He spent another 6 years in the service.
Yeah.
But he got very, very sick.
Yeah.
And natives ran him back over the mountain and down for medical attention.
Yeah, you know, if the 30, the point I always try to make is if the 32nd Division has not gotten their due or been recognized for their heroism and suffering, the people of Papua New Guinea have not either. They served heroically. They served as scouts and pathfinders and stretcher bearers and carriers for the American Army. And they were really an important part of the war effort. And yeah, many of the men were carried off the front 13 miles back to the clearing hospital before they were put on a plane and sent back to Port Moresby. But it was the natives who carried him the 13 miles through the jungles back to the clearing hospital. So maybe he was part of that.
Yeah, it's possible. Thank you very much for calling in. James, I thank you so much.
Yeah, well, thanks.
It's been a pleasure. And again, the book, of course, is titled The Ghost Mountain Boys, James Campbell, the author. And your website again
is ghostmountainboys.com.
GhostMountainBoys.com. Take a look at it. And are you working on something else now?
Yeah, I work on a third book, a very complicated story. My wife wanted the cocktail description of the book, the cocktail party description of the book, which meant two lines. I couldn't give it to her. So, so if we had another show, I could probably tell you what it's about.
Well, I'll tell you, when it comes out, we'll want to have you
back.
Thank
you very much.
Thank you, James. Okay. James Campbell, author of The Ghost Mountain Boys. And it's a riveting book, I can tell you that for sure. And whether or not you had a relative who was involved in it, I think it's a great book to take a look at, especially on a day like today, on Veterans Day. And, you know, there may be some things from that war included in the Wisconsin Historical Museum. I'm not sure. Probably not. Ann Koski, though, is director of the Wisconsin Historical Museum on Madison's Capitol Square, and she's going to be telling us about what's going on to preserve and store our Wisconsin history. That's coming up next here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.